Today is Monday, November 10th, 2025, and the time is 5:29. Can we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Hutt.
Here.
Mr. Jenkins.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mr. Sabadini.
Here.
Mrs. Tarassi.
Here.
Mrs. Vincent.
Here.
Mrs. Williams.
Here. You all stand for pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before I turn it over to Lieutenant Shaw to get the full agenda tonight, I'd like to get us out of here by 8 o'clock. We all start losing our endurance about them, so please stay on topic and keep the discussion pointed to the topic.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. So, yesterday I emailed out an update to you on 31AA funding. That is our school safety and mental health monies. At our last board meeting on October 14th, I updated you about the budget in this area right here, and that we have about $500,000 that came in prior year. It's going to increase, but with that, though, is if we elect to take the money, stipulations come alongside of it, and focus on mass casualty events. Well, since that October 14th meeting to now, a lot of things have transpired, and a lot more this past Friday. And so I wanted to get Jeremy on, to kind of go over, because it doesn't just impact the school, it can have a direct impact on you as board members. So we want to talk through what that looks like, and then we'll also hop into a conversation around potential lawsuit that Macomb ISD is filing on this matter. And but know that tonight we're not making any decision about if we're going to opt in, if we're not going to opt in. That will be done at a later date, and we'll get into what that will look like for you. Jeremy does have a hard stop, though, of 6:15, because we're one of three meetings he's in tonight for this very topic. So, Jeremy, with that, can you please begin to walk our board through the conversation we had earlier today about the risk and what's going on, and that little bit of a history part two, please.
I would be happy to do that. I'm glad to see everybody. Sorry I can't be with you in person. As Andy said, I'm trying to address this topic to three different school boards tonight, and so are some of my partners. It's a very hot topic for everybody in education in the state of Michigan. So thank you for the indulgence with the link. So I will try to talk an overview of what is at stake and the basic shape of the situation and the question that you're going to be asked to choose eventually, and then stop with enough time for back and forth kind of statement questions. Excuse me. As Andy indicated, the 31AA grant has been provided by the state for the past several years, but it's on a year-by-year basis. Every year is one-time money, and then it's been renewed for several years. And it is specifically for school safety, which does include mental health components as well. For the first time ever, the condition of receiving this grant, period. So it's not something we can parcel out, take a piece, leave a piece, something like that. The entire grant, for the first time, has been subjected to a condition that has never been tried in Michigan legislation before. There's been a variety of types of different conditions placed on different types of funding and different mechanisms over the years, but this is one that hasn't been tried before. There are constitutional questions about it, whether it's legit or not, but it is in the black letter of the law in the state budget that was passed. And so I want all of the boards that I serve to understand exactly what is in the balance that you try to determine, should we take the money, should we not take the money. So on the one side of the ledger, if you will, or on this one side of the balance, the money is money that could definitely be used. It's not speculative dollars, it's not esoteric, you know, theoretical maybe kind of a thing. It's money you could spend on cameras, on resource officers, on other security features, on different mental health positions. There's a long list of allowable expenditures under this grant, the 31AA grant. And we understand, we as a firm understand that that is real money that could be used for real things in your district, and that does weigh on one side of the balance. So I don't want to give the impression that I think that this is a completely one-sided question, real need for the funding, and that does weigh on that side of the balance. Let me talk about the condition that weighs on the other side of the balance. You probably heard something about this. It's been a hot topic for a couple weeks. It has been evolving for the last several weeks as deadlines have shifted, as there's statements made by the Department of Education, there's maybe lawsuits for all these things. I want to touch on where things stand today. But before we talk about where it stands today in those details, I want to briefly explain what is this condition that has been placed on receiving the money. And the language of the statute is, if you want to receive the grant, 31AA grant, which as Andy indicated we have received before, most districts have taken. If you want to receive the grant this year, you must, quote unquote, affirmatively waive any privilege in a couple of circumstances. That's the phrase, affirmatively waive any privilege. Affirmatively means you have to take some sort of action to do it. You can't say, yeah, in theory we take it. You have to pass a resolution, direct Andy to sign the paper, and he'll sign the paper if that's the direction you choose to go. But it's affirmatively waive any privilege. It's the waiver of privilege that has caused a lot of people concern. It causes your lawyer's attorney, we're not a lot of concern, and we're not alone on that. It's a concern for everybody working in public education in Michigan. The other part of this that I think most people don't object to, or at least not in principle, maybe in practice, that you also must agree to, is in the event of a quote-unquote mass casualty event, to fully cooperate with an investigation by either the Attorney General or anybody else the governor appoints to fulfill that role. Most people are not expressing a lot of concern about that because some level of cooperation is probably going to be appropriate in most circumstances, and nobody knows what fully cooperate really means. It's a little bit of a vague term, could be argued later. Let me talk about the next aspect of when this kicks in. That's in the event of a quote-unquote mass casualty event. You may have heard this language in the State Aid Act referred to as, oh, that's the governor's Oxford language or the attorney general's Oxford language. What that's a reference to is the tragedy at Oxford a few years ago. And following that event, the attorney general did try to open an investigation, demand cooperation of the district, and the district declined. The district said they were going to have their own investigation with their own paid investigators, which they did. They did follow through with that. But they declined the attorney general's invitation to conduct the investigation. That's where this language came from. The governor's office was inserted into the bill. However, what I like all of the boards that I serve to understand is that the phrase mass casualty event is much, much, much broader than just a tragedy like Oxford, which is to say a school shooting. It is not limited to shootings. It is not limited to a case when there is a death. It is not limited to an attack on a school. Mass casualty event means any one incident in which at least three or more people are seriously injured. And that's the statutory definition, the broader definition for that. So, for example, this could mean a bad bus accident in which nobody thankfully dies, but you have multiple people who have to take a trip by ambulance to the hospital. That would count as triggering this waiver that we're going to talk about. So that's one of the points I really want to drive home is this is not just about school shootings. This is about a much broader set of potential circumstances when this language could be triggered. So let's get right to the heart of it then. What does it mean to, quote unquote, affirmatively waive any privilege? The big one that everybody knows about and that is very concerning is the waiver of the attorney-client privilege. There are other privileges that different members of the school community might actually have attached as well, and I can touch briefly on those. But the big one is the waiver of the attorney-client privilege. That is the intent of the language in the State Aid Act from the governor, from the attorney general. When Oxford declined the attorney general's invitation, request, demand, however you choose to characterize it, to do an investigation, they relied upon the privacy of their communications between themselves, the district, and their attorneys. They had multiple law firms working for them. And that is where this idea of waiving that privilege comes from, is it was perceived, the right to have privacy of counsel was perceived by the attorney general to be an impediment to conducting the investigation that she wanted to conduct at the time. So waiving the attorney-client privilege, as I started by saying, has never been made a condition of a law in Michigan before. It's truly, in the truest sense of this word, unprecedented, which is, by way of saying, we don't have a lot of litigation history we can look on and say, oh, they're just going to, they'll say that one's unconstitutional and give us the money or something like that. It is not clear that that is the circumstance. What the waiver of the privilege means, for example, is, I'm going to give you two illustrations that I hope will be very readily apparent. This is not an esoteric problem that lawyers are just worried about. First illustration, if you're ever sued in a situation like this, or maybe even other situations, I'm going to come back to that one, but if you're ever sued and you have to sit for a deposition, rather than, hello, how are you, what's your name, let's start with some background about your job, etc., the first question is going to be, did you talk to an attorney before you came to this meeting? The answer is going to be yes, of course. Nobody goes to a deposition without a fair amount of preparation with an attorney. The follow-up question is going to be, tell me what the attorney said, because there will be no right to privacy between you and your counsel if the attorney-client privilege is waived. One other illustration of the impact on operations in a school board that's very direct. Then we're going to get into a couple of the second-order possibilities as well, which I think are relevant to you, but they're second-order effects. One more illustration of a direct impact. You know that you can lawfully, under the Open Meetings Act, go into closed session when you need to discuss a sensitive topic if you have a letter from your attorney on that topic. That is legal, and it's used by school boards and other municipal bodies all across the state. The way that works is the Open Meetings Act says you may go into closed session lawfully to consult a document or record that is otherwise exempt from disclosure under state or federal law. Well, what is the big category of documents that you have in your files that are exempt from disclosure under state or federal law? It's letters from your attorneys, which are exempted under the Freedom of Information Act. They're an explicit line item. They are exempt from disclosure. And so by putting a 1, 2, 3 together, you get a letter, it's privileged. That means it can't be disclosed. That means you can go into closed session under the Open Meetings Act. If the attorney-client privilege is waived, that's gone. You not only have lost the right to have a private letter from your attorneys, you've lost the right to have legally a private meeting to discuss the letter from your attorneys at that point in time. So, again, this is not just an esoteric concern that only troubles lawyers. It would have a real impact on the way that you conduct certain types of school business on behalf of your district. Let me talk briefly about a couple of the second-order effects and then touch on this possible lawsuit that Andy mentioned as well, and then I'll stop and leave lots of time for questions. So one of the – and if you have a copy of the letter we sent today, I'm sorry we didn't send it sooner, but things have literally been developing up to and including the middle of the day today, and so we wanted to give you the precious input possible. So the letter was sent this afternoon because it was actually modified at around noon today with new information. But one of the things that's mentioned in this letter, and I know is a concern for boards and board members all across the state, is the idea of governmental immunity and personal liability. And if you waive the attorney-client privilege, does that mean you're waiving either of those things? Are you giving up governmental immunity? Are you giving up some? Are you inviting additional liability on yourself? If someone, do you need private insurance? I know that MASD has been talking about some of these things. I don't know if they pushed that out to members yet, but I know they're talking about it. These are last questions. Let me talk about that briefly. I know what I'm saying sounds scary. I think it is kind of scary from a legal perspective, but I don't want to overstate it, and I don't want to give you the impression that the law says more than it actually says. So waiving any privilege, big deal. The law does not, however, automatically strip you of governmental immunity, and it does not automatically say you would be liable in circumstances that you wouldn't otherwise have been liable. So I want to be clear about that. That mechanic is not part of the law as it's written. There is concern about both of those things that comes from the fact that if you don't have privacy with your attorneys, it gives a lot more leverage to plaintiffs, and that's where the concern about increased liability comes from. That's where the concern about governmental immunity comes from. Is if you don't have the right to privacy with your attorney, and the plaintiffs can know all the counsel that you get from your attorney, that puts you at an enormous disadvantage in any sort of litigation posture. And so for that reason, both of those topics are real concerns. The way governmental immunity works in Michigan, mostly the same across the nation, is that because the school is a body of the government, people are not just allowed to sue unless they can demonstrate either malice, like you did something evil on purpose, that's rarely even asserted, let alone proved. But by far, most suits against the government, and Monroe has had some fairly recent experience with being on the receiving end of a suit that did allege this, is that we were grossly negligent. That's the phrase that's asserted. And if the plaintiff can't give the judge enough evidence right up front to say there's a good chance the district or whatever governmental body it is was grossly negligent, that means reckless, not just simple negligence, but just absolute recklessness, gave no regard to their duties whatsoever. Unless the plaintiff can give the judge a reason to believe they have enough evidence to prove that, the suit gets dismissed, as the recent lawsuit that we had to deal with in Monroe was dismissed for that reason at that stage in the process. I know it seemed like it dragged out for a little while. That was actually right at the beginning of the lawsuit process when that lawsuit was dismissed for that reason. If you don't have the right to privacy of counsel, many more cases will get past that threshold and will end up going to a trial. That's where the concern about increased liability comes from, because once you make it easier by means of leverage, by taking away your protection, your right to privacy of counsel, once you make it easier for those lawsuits to proceed, even though the idea of governmental immunity has not been altered in the law, practically speaking, it's going to be easier for plaintiffs to get there, and that makes it more expensive for you to defend those lawsuits, which means it gets more expensive for your insurer to cover those lawsuits. And that's when you start running into the concern about are individual board members exposed in some way. So there's no automatic exposure. It's not written into the law, a new line saying board members are hereby more personally liable or something like that. The concern becomes, again, if the leverage is made in favor of the plaintiffs, that if you're insurance carriers, for example, the standard policy, and I know you don't have Seth Seg, and Andy's looking for information about your first private insurer, which might actually be better in this circumstance than most schools. Most schools in Michigan use one of the two insurance pools, either Seth Seg or Mizell. You have private insurance, and that, again, that may be more advantageous once Andy gets to the details of that. We just talked about that this morning when he's going to look for it. But if you have a standard policy that says $5 million per incident, that's kind of a normal coverage policy for a public school district in Michigan. If all of a sudden it becomes more likely these lawsuits go farther forward in the process, they don't get kicked out at an early phase in the process, you get closer and closer to that cost threshold. And once you run into that cost threshold is when the question becomes, do I need private insurance, right? Do I need personal insurance as a board member, as a superintendent, as an administrator, in all of those circumstances? So I don't want you to walk away thinking that the law has changed to say you now own more liability. It did not change it that way. But mechanically speaking, if you're ever in this situation where you did sign the waiver, you gave up the attorney-client privilege, and then there were an incident and the attendant lawsuits, you'd be more likely to be running against the cost limits of your insurance policy, which may make you want to think about private additional coverage. That's where that idea comes. And I talked about that with Tom a little bit this morning. The last thing I'll touch on, as Andy indicated, Macomb County Intermediate School District, the ISD from Macomb, has indicated last Friday afternoon, and again, we've been in contact with them all day today, that sometime tomorrow night and or Wednesday morning, they do plan to file a lawsuit seeking injunctive relief. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And they're asking for other districts and ISDs to participate. I know the Monroe County ISD is planning to sign, co-sign, as a fellow participant in that lawsuit. What does that mean to seek injunctive relief? Essentially, they're asking for a temporary restraining order against the state. The idea being, and it's not my lawsuit, so I have not seen it, so I'm speculating based on what all the good arguments are. I know what the good arguments are. They would be asking the state to be prohibited from enforcing that waiver mechanism. The hope being, of course, that everybody would get their money and then not be on the hook for waiving the attorney-client privilege. I don't think it's likely to be that outcome, unfortunately, which is not to rain on the Macomb ISD's parade. I think it's great that they're willing to take a stand and make the argument. If they succeed in getting a temporary restraining order against the state, the most likely outcome is the money is going to be stuck in escrow somewhere, in which case, if that happens, we would hope that the timeline in which you have to make a decision would be delayed until such point as that litigation was resolved. As it stands right now, the MBE required deadline for making a decision is November 30th, which practically speaking means November 26th, the day before Thanksgiving, because I don't anticipate anybody's going to come in here on the Sunday after Thanksgiving to vote on anything. But technically speaking, the deadline is November 30th. To make a decision, do you want to tell the superintendent, sign it, take the money, and waive whatever privilege the attorney general says must be waived, or, on the other hand, not do that, in which case we would be acknowledging we would not be getting these funds allocated in this year. So that's the overview, that's the shape of the problem, and I will stop so that there's time for back and forth questions.
Wonderful. All right, Jeremy, thank you so very much. Lisa, this is it has grown a lot since budget came out, especially around, how it will impact schools. Our biggest thing is back to the liability and what that all means. So is there any direct questions that he can answer from the legal side that you have right here?
Yeah. So if we were to accept the 31AA funds, does that mean that we wouldn't be able to go into closed session to discuss school safety and security?
So it's a great question. So let me start by saying things that I know are 100% true and then try to make a reasonable interpretation of that from there. So what is true, absolutely, is there's no limiting language on the waiver in the statute. The phrase is simply affirmatively waive any privilege, period. There's no for this year, for this lawsuit, for this type of case, for these specific circumstances, nothing like that. It says if you want the money, you will agree to, one, cooperate with the Attorney General if you have a mass casualty event, and affirmatively waive any privilege. The concern that we have, because there's no limiting language, is I could imagine, if I was being generous about the person that drafted that, that maybe they were saying, well, we would just expect you to waive the privilege if you have a school problem to not hold up the AG. You waive it to the extent that the AG needs information. That's not what the law says. It's to the extent she needs it, or about that matter, or anything like that. What it says is you affirmatively agree to waive it. If you read that just as it's written, you could say in any circumstance. It's waived, period, which is how we read it, because that's what the black letter says, which would mean, no, you couldn't go into closed session to consider. That's the short answer. I didn't mean to take a long-winded answer to your question. The short answer would be no. You couldn't go into closed session to consider the written advice of counsel anymore, because the written advice of counsel is no longer subject to the attorney-client privilege. It's no longer private, and therefore that section of the Open Meetings Act would not lawfully apply anymore.
So that's only if a mass casualty event occurred and we were being investigated. So, any other questions before I dive into a couple other items?
I just want Jeremy explain again how broad mass casualty event, because that could be a fight, it could be many.
Three or more people being injured.
That's right. Right. And injured is pretty broad.
That's the definition.
Yeah.
Because you can have psychological.
Well, and you take this past Saturday night there up at Harper Woods, there was a shooting. I don't know if there is more than one person injured up there, but this would be a potential opportunity where they could trigger this language. One thing I heard in the room, Jeremy, had to do with how long, so the money's going to be there for 1 year, but if we took it, how, is it, sounds like basically indefinite as long as you know, this board took it, that this seven and myself are on the hook until something in the law would change.
That's a great question. Yes. So again, just starting with what I know is 100% true and then kind of going for reasonable interpretation from there. There is no limit in the law. It just says affirmatively waive any privilege. There's no time frame. It doesn't say as pertains to this school year, which is what the allocation's for, anything like that. It's just waive the privilege, which again is concerning. I think it would be different odds. Like, it wouldn't change what to me is the shocking request that you waive the attorney-client privilege, but it would change the statistical odds for you if it was for the next 7 months, something like that, right? Maybe you bet that you can ride out 7 months. I mean, I'm not telling you I would take that bet myself, but I could understand it if somebody did rather than open-ended in perpetuity, something like that. The law itself does not have any limiting language in it. There's been one hint going around. I don't know if anybody in the room has heard this. We've heard it because we've been neck deep in this topic for the last 3 weeks. A staffer for MVP on a Zoom call a week and a half ago, 10 days ago, 11 days ago, stated verbally, didn't even have it on a slide, if that would mean anything more, but stated verbally, oh, you guys, stop worrying about this so much. It's just for the year the money's for. After that, another attorney who was on the call from another firm wrote a letter and submitted it publicly, kind of sent it around publicly, and said, oh, don't worry about it. It's only for a year. We're not taking that position because there is a lot of litigation history in Michigan that says individual staff members shooting off their mouth, that's a technical term, but in paraphrase, individual staff members for an agency don't get to bind the agency and set government policy. That's not how it works. And so I would love it if that was true, if it were true that it was only for the school year, because again, I think it changes the odds and you could maybe make a different decision calculation at that point in time. But that is not written into the law. It has not been published by the Department of Education as an administrative interpretation of the law, anything like that. Where that came from was just one staff member saying it out loud on Zoom. And so we don't think you can rely on that to say, oh, don't worry about it in the future because that guy said it's only for this year.
Would it be the school year or the fiscal year?
The state fiscal year.
Right?
The state fiscal year. Okay. So, and the idea of limited to 1 year is not crazy because that dynamic does exist between the federal government and the state government. So when the feds appropriate money and put conditions and limitations, they explicitly state these conditions are attached to the money for this period of time. So it's not a wild idea. But it does not appear in the law. It does not appear in the state budget that was just passed and signed. It doesn't appear in a publication from MBE saying, administratively, we are interpreting it this way. It's so far just one guy saying it. Now, if they issue an administrative rule saying, we're not going to enforce this beyond a year, you'll be the first to know. But they have not done that so far. There's been nothing like that. It's just one guy on a Zoom call. I think it was a lady, actually. So one lady on a Zoom call.
So we can talk about the money side of it probably after we're done with Jeremy.
Yeah.
So 31 AA grant, it's a grant, correct?
Yes, part of the state aid budget bill, yes.
Okay.
It's called a grant.
We don't apply for it.
I just want to clarify what we're talking about here. Okay. And it originally was, what, 550, and they increased it 6 this year, so it's like...
Now we're just about $500,000 this year. We were over $1 million a year prior and we cut it. And then this year it got increased, would be increased by about $165,000 roughly.
Like
the total would be roughly.
Oh, just under $700,000.
So you said this is now law, or is this law passed by the legislature in the state?
There is a law, but there's still an open spot about what's going to happen. So that's a good question. Let me explain that dynamic. What the state budget did, which has been passed by both houses, signed by the governor, it is a law, says there is $343 million in change put into the pot for this grant that's set aside to be distributed per capita for schools that elect in. And so what they're going to do is whatever the ultimate deadline, right now it's November 30th, if this lawsuit succeeds in doing anything positive, I would hope that it would delay that deadline. But right now it's November 30th. So what the law says is the money is allocated, and of the schools making the election to participate, then the Department of Education will be charged with distributing that out per capita. So essentially, divide up that pot among the number of students that reside in the school districts that have opted in. I think that creates a little bit of a perverse dynamic, but that is what it is. What I mean by perverse is that the fewer people take the money, the bigger the pot gets for those people, right? If one school district opts in, and all 537 other school districts in the state say no, one school district in theory gets $343 million, right? That's just to make it absurd.
Talk about dangling a carrot, huh? Is that a carrot, Jeremy?
I'm sorry.
Is that the carrot?
Yeah, you can say the money is the carrot.
Why are the changes? Do we know why? Why did they ask?
So this is, I'm going to take this one for you because I know you don't want to do this one. This is the governor's one sticking point. And she wanted in the budget, we've been able to track it back. In fact, legislative people try to go to her and talk about bringing forth new legislation because of acts. Because of actually doing that. Yep. And
if I had a budget put up, that would felt like they were told.
And there's other politics involved around a couple other attorneys and stuff like that too.
This came strictly from the governor's office. Neither Democrat legislators or Republican legislators knew any about it. They passed this bill at 3:30 in the morning. When I talked to Jim DeSena, he had no idea this was even in the bill, because they had 45 minutes to read the bill before they voted on it. The governor's office threw it in.
Yeah,
but
is there a chance that they're going to put a contingency like this at public rates?
So what you're getting at right there is why the lawsuit, why all this other stuff, this is the first door. And if it's allowed to be walked through, where does it begin with? Where does it stop?
Didn't that happen with ESSER funds? There were things that you had to agree to do to accept ESSER funds, because that's where you got the level of funding from.
That was generally
the more you were willing to take, the more requirements you had.
But anyway.
So that was the start. That was like the tester, kind of, right?
Again, that was from the feds versus the
state. Yeah, but it's still the same.
I don't remember that was it.
I can share that all with you, but we'll just move on.
So, but I just want to know, that's why there's a lot of scenarios that get us a little worried, like it opens doors. Where does it open the door? Around government immunity. So, and nothing against you here, but this idea of if this begins the first step down the road, and that's one group's goal out there to do away with governmental immunity. So then just where will it begin to go?
It's a bad precedent.
Jeremy, I'm looking for the healthcare side of it. We used to have personal liability, you know, some carried insurance, some if that was built into your benefit package, that was included in it or whatnot. We're not just talking board members here. We're talking also those that make decisions in the district, which would not just be excluded the superintendent, but it would also be those others in the district administrators. Yeah. So I just don't want anybody to think that this just the school board, because this is those that make decisions on a regular basis for the school.
Yes. Potentially a very broad category of individuals could potentially be impacted by this. One other quick note about the litigation aspect. If the attorney-client privilege were waived in the context of NASCAR at the event, and the Attorney General said this is triggered, and I'm holding you to it at this point in time. It would also be waived regarding any other litigation, i.e. civil litigation, that came from the same event. And so you have a situation where you have a tragedy, you're trying to deal with that, put the contract together as best you can, whatever type of tragedy it is, whatever it is. The Attorney General then gets involved, and you're dealing with that, and then the inevitable lawsuits here with your attorney-client privilege would not only be waived for the attorney general, it would be waived, period, and that would mean in those civil lawsuits as well.
So when we look at liability insurance and we look about the ability to be able to cover it, I don't see how these insurance companies could cover the context of what we'd be talking about, because you'd be talking about the criminal, you'd be talking about the civil, you'd be, like, times multiple individuals. I just don't see how that would even work.
That's one of the issues we identified in the letter that we sent. We think this will, regardless of whether you sign it or not, it's going to drive us insurance. If it For the reason you just identified.
So like here in this building, I put this out to Bill Lyle last week, so he started working the handover. So we're working a private company with handover, so they're a little tricky, right? So they're going to distribute it, should we get into a situation where micro oxygen right there, each order shot is worth $5 million, so it's $5 million lesson. So their top coverage was, which is still that said that actually goes on. Now for our scenario, it's different. We're not part of that group, we're that company, but it's still supposed to have a 10% but we also have $10 million coverage. And so Bill's working with handover to find out what does this all mean. Is there any kind of a clause in there by us accepting this language that puts more risk on or change the variable and bring on more risk? So.
Because if there's a suit against the board, there's eight of us. Because it would be up for you.
And potentially an administrator.
Yeah. But at minimum, it would be eight. And so that would be the minimum, or seven if you're excluded. So if it would be a one person, it would be a seven.
Well, so what they do is it's naming the district. So like in our last one, it names the district. It puts our
right. But that's why I'm just saying that we can't look at it as an individual. It would be
it's the whole district. The point of where I think Jeremy was going was. For each of you is just, and Jeremy, one last clarifying point is we already have indemnification, we already have liability insurance provided by the district. Based on that information right there, the district, let's say individuals in this room wanted their own liability insurance coverage, they got to pay for it themselves. The district can't offset that cost.
Right. So each of you as board members and then administrators and teachers have in their contracts as well. But to the extent you're doing your job, to the extent you're not doing something illegal, yes, you're covered. You're indemnified with the district pays for your legal defense if you're sued. But yes, if you wanted your own additional individual coverage, that would be an individual responsibility. It's unfortunate we even have to talk about that. Most of the time it's not relevant. The reason it is just because if this goes through, this dynamic will increase the leverage that plaintiffs have to such an extent that it's just going to push you closer to those policy gaps, and that's why it's even a question at this point.
Oh, nice. Jeremy, one other thing we talked about this morning, that it would also affect the teacher-student relationship as far as immunity or privilege.
Yeah, I can talk about that briefly as well. So if any privilege is that waiver, there's a number of them, but one that's very relevant in a public school, it's very, most people don't even know about it, but it's there in the Revised Judicature Act, which is Michigan's law about the legal system in Michigan, the law that sets up our structure of the legal system in the state of Michigan. And in the Revised Judicature Act, there's a passage that says that no staff member shall reveal information learned in confidence from a pupil. The phrase without a court order. That privilege belongs to the pupil, not to the school. So the scenario that I envisioned for Tom earlier this morning is if you have a bus accident and there's a bunch of people hurt, and so it qualifies as a mass casualty incident. And one of the students who was sitting on the front of the bus told their teacher as they got to the hospital, and the teacher rode along with them, and she says, "I know what happened. The bus driver was texting while she was driving the bus." Right? If the Attorney General says, you agreed to cooperate, you waived all privilege, give me everything you have, and we do. We give everything, including that little kid's statement. We give the student's witness statement over at that point in time. We just violated the student's rights because the student has the privilege. We don't, and we're not allowed to waive it, but the Attorney General demanded we do. Or on the other hand, we don't waive it because we're a very aware board, and we say, we know about the student's equal privilege. You can't have that. And she says, no, no, you said any privilege, you waived it, and then you're off. So the point on this one is that the very fact of being forced to promise that you will waive any privilege invites additional litigation, besides all of this risk about not having privacy with your attorneys anymore. Every point of the way along this would be litigated, and that in and of itself has to go, as you guys know, in the murder of litigation is increased cost. So that's another very real issue. Thank you, Tom. It's not the one everybody's mostly paying attention to, but it's also a real issue.
So any other questions for Jeremy? We're going to say goodbye to him, and I'll wrap up a few other items on this topic. All right, Jeremy,
good afternoon.
Back to walk.
Take care.
So the other being is, like I said, late this afternoon, he that letter to me. I will push that out to you guys after our meetings tonight, so you can have it. We needed to put this on here for two reasons. One is, I said late Friday, the People Alliance meeting, and the McComb ISD superintendent's there. He's part of it. He just right came out and said, "Hey, we're going to file a lawsuit. We're working with Kent County ISD." Monroe County said yes. Ingham County and McComb are doing it together. And what will happen is, so they're representing all the counties. At the end of it all, local schools can also make that election. McComb and Ingham pick up the tab for the first go at, okay? But after that, it could get distributed out. What the thought pattern is around why they wanted to have locals get involved is this, is that it's one thing to go to, say, the county, ISD is, okay? But Steve can't speak on behalf of all the schools in Monroe County. He can only speak on behalf of the ISD and the students that are there. And so when it really push comes to shove, because there actually, this lawsuit goes, is we filed against the state of Michigan, i.e. the governor, and the Department of Ed, okay? And so what would happen, though, is that by local boards taking action, say, yes, we'll be a part of this, is now that our student population goes into that. So when the judge says, whom are you representing? You can actually see legit names of school districts. It's something I need you to ponder. There's no, like I said, when it comes to a cost, we've seen these different litigations happen at different times where it's done broadly. If you spread it across, you know, think about Macomb, Oakland, Ingham, Kent County, those are monster schools, counties, and populations. Travis City is in as a part. I know they got another ISD out of the upper part of UP. And the reason is they're trying to get a balance of politics involved too. So it's not just, you know, going for just the Democratic counties, it's for both, because it's impacting both areas. So what I would like to do is tomorrow night, add that to the agenda. You all can have a conversation to do something with around the idea of a supporting the.
Do you want to vote on this tomorrow?
Here's why. The final lawsuit on March 29th.
So the vote is whether to get involved in the lawsuit?
Just the lawsuit, yes. Okay. Just the lawsuit. Only the lawsuit, because our hope is right now that we don't have to make any decision in regards to the money. And what I mean by that is that through pressure, the legislature, they get to the governor, and they get it to the point where privilege comes out. And all it is that you will allow for an investigation through the AG if this happens. Which, okay, that's not a problem there, but the privilege side, so take that risk away. So our hope is that the legislature can get in there. Like I said, when I talked with our, let's say, liaisons today, they're like, well, they've talked to the governor, they've made it abundantly clear that that's not going to happen, that she will not do that. And so what comes next? The other part being then is, as we start to stretch this thing out, we start to think about, well, what other parameters are there? Remember when we were going through the budget, or state, you know, they had us in the shutdown, and we were talking, okay, when do we need to have the money by, or they need to pass the budget? And I think it was October 10th was the date that they said, okay, have it done by then so we can get our allocation. Well, MDE, right now, because they're supposed to put the money in December, could move that date back to, for example, December 10th being that last day based on what we've done before. So they can move that date because of all that's happening. The long and the short would be is that we would probably have to have a special board meeting on Monday, November 24th to make a decision to opt in or not. Okay? And so hoping that a lot of things occur between now and that date to where we don't even have to have a meeting that this occurs. And so I'm going to put in your hands tonight, like I said, the letter from Jeremy on this. And then as more information is available, the biggest one will be from Bill Lyle on the liability insurance. That all comes out of there, too, that all can mean to us. Whatever action you take from it, either to be a part or not to be a part, has zero bearing on what you have to do later. We asked that question earlier today. So if you say, I want to be a part of the lawsuit, and then later on we still have to take the money, so be it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So what is the cost to get involved
So right now.
I understand it'd be distributed, but dollars matter.
Yep, so if you think about it in totality, and you think about that, Macomb and Oakland counties represent about 150,000 students. You go to Kent County, it's a similar number. And so it'd be a per pupil amount there. So take anyone that's involved, and let's say it's.
Are they giving you any projection
no.
on what that would be?
No, because one of the things that they did say is that
be
this
a
one's.
Very big suit.
But it's different than the rest.
The Department of Ed.
Oh, sure. But it's different than the other ones where you're not having to go get witnesses, you're not going to get statements. So it's a lot different from what they described on Friday to us and what we would typically see with the normal lawsuit that occurs. And so that's why the cost is unknown right there. But what we know is that, like I said, Macomb and Ingham are going to take, when we say the first round at it, is put forth the pay for like all the attorney's fees already right now, pay for the filing, pay for that first court date, which they would hope or believe right now, should that happen, will be next week at some
are
point.
Are they asking for people to get involved with them? Is that what they're
wanting? Oh, they love for as many schools across the state of Michigan to get involved. Because if we could have a whole, if they could have the majority of these large districts and the smaller come on board, and that's why they've been advising even all over, please take no action until the last possible hour. Otherwise, you're going to send a mixed message to Lansing that says, or your finance director goes in and automatically opts in. Well, then the governor or whoever's going to look at it and go, what's the problem here? We already have 35% of our schools across the state already opted into this.
And I know for sure that Lansing Public is opted in. And I know
did Lansing Public?
I
missed
that. Yeah.
Lansing Public, do you know any other school districts?
Is it Lawson or opted in?
They accepted it.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone else. I know right now here in Monroe County, most everyone right now is in a pause mode. So they bring their different rules in, I know in Wayne County. And Jerry said that earlier today. So.
They have to
respond. Yes.
What do you mean?
I don't know what it meant there, just that they have, because of how they are funded or something in Wayne County. It could be there. I don't know. But.
So we have an unknown cost factor, right? Number one. We, my question on the AG involvement is currently, and the AG, and I believe that I already mentioned this, come in on any kind of incident and open your investigation.
No, that was already proved with actually.
Okay.
Yep.
So there's different things. So this would say they can't.
Only through the mechanism of a mass casualty.
Again, you've already determined that is such a low threshold. Yeah.
Well, the thing, I think we're looking off of the number two, and this is, as we look at both sides, you got to look at the staffing that the AG has and what she at this point in time, is trying to do. She's trying to garner votes, and so is there, I just look at.
Is she up for election?
No, she's fighting for
governor. Sorry. So if you look at, that's what I said, if you look at Harper Woods right now as a fast example, okay, they just were given an opportunity, if Harper Woods is elected in to it right now, forgot to ask you that question, are they potentially on the hook? Mm-hmm. So someone's going to get tested out there.
So before I would look to jump into whether I think you should get involved in this lawsuit, I think the bigger question is how many other schools have opted in as a result, because people are garnering right now. So if you get these big districts to opt in to be able to do it like they did, those that join the lawsuit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, so we have no idea who has already opted in to take the money. Okay. That's what you were referring to, right?
Yeah, Jeremy doesn't have an idea.
Oh, no, because that's at the state level. So who does that? We would have no access to it.
He might know the school that he represents. He's going to know that.
Yeah.
But outside the school,
they represent a lot.
They represent a lot, and then Boone probably represents
a lot. Where did I read about the school somewhere? That's all I did.
information you got. So there's two things for you maybe to be thinking about, and that might help the conversation is this, is that the lawsuit is that, the push on that one is to really draw out the ability, the trying to stop taking rights away from the local schools, okay, and that, and don't think in terms of that money, because at the end of the day, we're going to have to make a decision around that pot of money, and do we, and what's risk to reward for us, should we do this or not, because you're exactly right, you start sitting down and doing the math one. We're expecting $165,000 more, okay? And when we start to think about the number of large districts that are that we're hearing may opt to not take the money, well, that, for people foundation, allocation just goes straight up, right?
You're in a serious risk-benefit analysis. It has many factors.
It's
into
scary.
Which is why I don't like
the idea
of needing to decide if we're coming in a lawsuit before we know everything associated with it,
well,
because that's,
well, then
I'm not a big fan of making a decision without all parts.
Well,
unfortunately, that's the time schedule.
Yeah, this one is one of those, this is a sad situation.
So when's the decision, final decision for the lawsuit?
So they're actually, tomorrow, they're actually asked by close of business tomorrow, and so I would have to kind of give an indication that, hey, on Wednesday morning, I'll give you up or down if our board is behind this or not.
I need to know why we would, for me, let someone else fight.
So that's what I was saying.
Why do we need to get in the fight? They're bigger schools, they got more per pupil, they got...
Well, that's not it. You gotta remember, if you think about like, but if you think about like this, let's look at, when you think about cost, okay, reasonable amount, right? So this process right here, if we said, okay, it takes $500,000 to fund the attorneys to fight this battle, you know, right here.
That seems,
okay.
That seems low.
I don't know how, because the way they talk about the timeline,
so it's really
filing
briefs.
Yeah.
There's no witnesses. It's not
sure.
That's what, give me a half a second here. So at the very beginning, right now, so the McComb and ISD are picking up the initial cost of the entire project, about $50,000, you know, for the amount of time to invest and all that. So now, once it goes further, like over the next few years, that's where everyone else will get involved. But you have to think about it. Oh, the governor's not going to be happy about this. So you better believe that there's going to be a fight right there. But the idea is that, you know, once they start to strip away some of these privileges that we have, why would it ever stop?
This is a slippery slope.
Yeah. Eventually.
Even if you say no, they're like, good, now you're not getting the money. But we're holding you to the same standard to do all the stuff. Right?
So let's go there very quickly. Let's go here that says that the lawsuit moves forward and the judge grants the injunction. That money, they have two choices. The new money, is it just the new money or is it the whole pot? The idea is it's going to be the whole pot, is then tucked away. So anything that we have planned for this year isn't there. It's sitting in escrow. So
regardless.
So I think when it's all said and done, here's where we lay it out there. We take the money, or we're not guaranteed it's coming in because the lawsuit happens and we still don't get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You say, okay, I'm not gonna take the money, lawsuit happens, and it's granted, well, we still don't get the money, but there's still a chance later on. When it really is all said and done, I'm not sure we're gonna see a penny of that money come December anyways.
So there lies my question. So what currently, and the reason I'm looking at this amount, because I'm going with 500,000.
Yeah.
Because that's without the additional. So So we'll just go with 500,000.
What we've had in the past.
Okay, so the 500,000 is sitting there. What are we currently doing with the 500,000? There is no doubt in my mind that money is already allocated.
Two BCBAs, three RBTs, and our...
More than three RBTs. It's just a partial FTEs of multiple RBTs.
Yep.
We're losing a lot of acronyms.
We're losing a lot of
okay.
TBI.
I'm sorry.
It's our board certified behavior analyst, which develop and oversee behavior plans for students with severe behaviors. And then RBTs are registered behavior techs that implement the behavior plan with our high-need students. And then we also, the contracted services with ACAP for the security consultation comes out of that. And then I feel like I need to open my spreadsheet. Care Solace, we paid with 31AA last year. And this is what I had in the budget for it. We obviously haven't spent that whole $500,000 that I budgeted by any means. And we did have a little over $58,000 carried over from last year that we could still use for some of those things until this all.
But
58,000 is 58,000 carryover.
Right. Yeah. So here's my math. Okay. We don't have that 500,000. We now have to absorb, if we want to maintain the current staffing that we have, we now have to absorb that 500,000. And now the lawsuit is suggesting once we're in, the dollar amount we're committing to is an unknown factor. So if we say, well, it's going to run us by 500,000, we're up from there.
No. Well, I was trying to get it. I couldn't get there fast enough.
Okay, go.
If you think in terms of that the lawsuit costs $500 million, $500,000, you have to divide that over the number of students involved. And so if it's 250,000 students involved, then you take the 250 divided by the 500,000 multiplied by 4,500 students. That's how much
students.
So I'm
multiplying it times the years.
I think
we treat too well.
No, I was thinking that.
So I'm not looking at
what
month.
No, I'm thinking that.
It was in there.
I was thinking
of the battle between America.
Yeah, you try and eat your sandwich. It's in your sandwich.
Well, once you get it, we
got to
take whatever it is.
This grant is only for 1 year.
Thank
you.
I just don't like an unknown factor.
So
because we can't afford to
do that. But we can. So we've been a part of it. So if you have 250,000 students that schools are representing that are involved in this, you have a half million dollars per student. Times our 4,600 or $9,200 that we would be having to pay. The state went through a lawsuit, and this is much more broad in regards to retirees and really focused around superintendents and ORS taking and not allowing percent increases and really hammering them. And so there was a multi-year lawsuit that occurred, and it had a lot more groups, had a lot more stuff involved. And I'll kind of MAS and find out how much that one cost, because what we're talking about right now is not going to be the scale of it.
What was Jeremy's opinion about the lawsuit? We asked him.
He didn't have a care either way on it right there.
You gotta invite me.
He was pretty good.
If I had a reason, he was for joining the lawsuit. I mean, he was pretty open on saying, again, what Andy said, this probably won't resolve right away. They'll put the money in escrow until they're working through it. He says, don't expect to get the money just because the lawsuit's been filed.
Sure.
But you still have to follow the law, make a decision, and in or out by the end of the deadline.
Unless the injunction,
Unless they put that off.
Well, that's the thing, he's hoping the lawsuit, and a minimum will push out that trigger date.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
Don't give an injunction.
So I will, because we do, you know, I do have a fiduciary requirement on this, is, that I've thought about this. A year ago, in June, we played chicken with the governor, okay? And we mean the superintendent pushing hard, going, you should give us that $240 for people, and the 7% that was allocated for retirees, that they were saying we didn't need to pay in anymore for the insurance side of it. And so we played chicken, and we lost. And we lost bad. We hit 240. And I liken it to the exact same scenario right now, is who was going to blink? So we filed the lawsuit, do all this stuff. The legislature, like you said, they were unaware, so they're not happy campers over this, because now it's got a lot of their locals all upset. You know? But will it make, and put a press on, you know, on the governor, knowing that there's an election coming up, and
the governor's not running for
this. She's not, but
it
will impact her party. So I don't know where that all leads. So that's the side where it's a junker kind of situation we're all in, because at the end of the day, darling, you're 100% right, where this is going to impact the Monroe Public Schools students, positively or negatively. If we take the money, oh, it has huge potential. If we don't take the money, or the injunction happens, that $500,000 that we were expecting, we can still use our, we have increased 31A money that increased in other areas. What it does is it just moves us back from what we were already going to not, we were going to use 31A money to go against general fund monies that we could.
Yeah, because we can get the increase on the other side. Right?
Yes. Yeah. And the good thing is, we only lost
right.
80 students from the FTE, and
yeah.
the budget, we're losing 120.
Yeah.
So
we've
got. Yeah, but we had to cut the budget anyway, and we still haven't resolved that situation.
Yes, we have, Darla. Okay, I know you're worried that we have the senior money problem, but we don't. We're going to bring it back into everything in front of you, but when we look at it, we have roughly $1 million of new money for 31A. We have new monies that came in because our per pupil allotment was we budgeted less, and we needed more of that. We're $100,000 more due to our per pupil count that we had budgeted for. So we start adding those all in. The problem is, for example, the student count difference, like that $500,000 of new revenue that we were not expecting because our student count wasn't that far down. Well, unfortunately, with what's happening right now in the 31AA money, it just got emailed. That's the junk of it, okay? And so that's what just really bites with it. So when we look at this year, 25-26 school year, revenue-wise is much stronger. We've been reducing expenditures, so they're both going to have a positive impact. It's just stuff like this that you look at going, well, $500,000. And or it could be $500,000 even on top of that if we take the money because of, you know, the number of schools that don't. So lots to come. So the document you're going to get from Jeremy, it's long, okay, so read through it. Know that if we need to get him back on a call or get him back down here for more clarity, he'll gladly do that. So I'll push that out to you guys after our meeting tonight.
Does anybody have any questions? I have just another question. Is any of the 31AA money being spent on state mandated things for the school? I mean, I hear a lot of the care solace and the RBT, so nothing is mandated. Just considered
the only
extra.
Thing that kind of sort of could be with the EOP work, that emergency operations plan work that ACAP is assisting us with, but that's already an unfunded mandate anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But that would just be a small portion of the work that they're doing, but everything else is just.
So that would have been for us to pick up, but we could use it out of the 31A.
Correct.
Yeah. So I think
it's still yours.
I feel a lot like you. Why would I make myself a target for people who might have an agenda later down the road? Why? There's really no upside.
Because there's these many factors out there that we don't know. And so when you jump your feet into a fire and you don't know how many logs are burning, that makes a big difference. And I like to know how many logs are burning,
sure.
Or at least a big idea of how many.
I just don't see shooting reason, possibly make yourself an enemy.
But at the same side, the other side of it is, if we're willing to accept not knowing all of those factors, you know, being in a fight for what we believe in is always a valid fight.
Sure.
I'll take a fight for what I believe in.
And I think that's one of the main factors of the lawsuit. Yes, the injunction to cause the money and all of that, but I think a tertiary effect of the lawsuit is to also say, we can't vote you out of office right now, but this is what we want. Please do it. Listen to us now. Because we don't really have a voice otherwise. So that's just something to consider.
So a lot more come on this. Okay. And so,
but we have until tomorrow.
Only
for the lawsuit.
For the lawsuit.
Yes,
just for the lawsuit. And so, you know, it's one of those things. What's that?
So I know what's going to happen tomorrow. We're going to get up to the vote. And, you know,
yep.
I'd just like to hear anybody else's thoughts, because it's important to know what our thoughts are before we get there tomorrow, too. And
well, right, I got more answers for you.
Yeah.
My opinion, I like joining it because it sends a message to the governor that we don't like this, we don't want this, it's not good for the schools. If school districts just give in and take it, she's going to say, oh, everything's fine with it.
More districts will get involved, more legislatures political from those areas.
Yeah.
On both parties will get involved.
What's your balance on that right now? If you
this
can find that out, what the
no,
balance is right now. Well, I would like to know the balance.
Jeremy didn't say it, but Jeremy A. is not happy with this either. Because of the teacher-student privilege, this will drag teachers in too, big time.
So
they don't want.
So what is, if I'm missing something, what is the governor's logic in having a student? What is her benefit? She's leaving all the
schools.
So
it's personal.
It's the whole AG part.
We believe that she's
a lot of donors.
AG, like,
attorneys.
Right?
Yeah,
so
we
think
there's personal at some
there's
point.
There's possibly
finger
two attorneys with Oscar that
yeah,
she's friends with. And so that's
that's the motivated side of it, too.
That's, it's just, again, that isn't a speculation.
So if you could find out I want to assure it,
yeah,
I totally do not want to join a political fight.
So
on that we as don't need to be involved in, because we're supposed to be non-political, and I understand that is a oxymoron when it comes to to anything, but I would like to know that. Because if you're talking about the representation of the communities and a balance of that representation to represent it all, then it is political.
So something else to consider.
Is it all Democrat counties getting in?
Oh, no. No, that's
I know.
Something else to consider is also the size of school districts that are involved. Yes, it's great to have the gigantic school districts and like densely populated counties represented in a lawsuit, but it's also really powerful to have smaller, more rural areas also jumping into the lawsuit because our voices and our perspectives also need to be shared there. So I think that there's also power in that.
That's what sounds like. It's not political.
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell for a fact that Ingham County is strong Democrat, Monroe County is strong Republican. I mean, you go around the state, this isn't all political. Everybody's in
there. Well, I want to make sure that there is a balance before I jump in. That's all I'm asking. There's more Democrat leaning cities and there's more Republican, then you're more apt to get my buy-in.
You're looking for
but
a 50-50
balance.
You're looking for more of a 50-50.
Yes. If there is a close balance, you will get me much quicker than that.
I wonder if Jeremy can talk to his counterpart to Spoon. Between those two law firms,
it's not true in this filing yet. It's Miller Cantrell, I think is the name. And so they're actually really good. They work together. They all work in McComb. So Jeremy will be able to help get this answer for you.
Yeah.
A little better. So I appreciate it. You know, this was not on the agenda, but this is one of those things that's a big item.
And a projected cost.
So, Mark, thank you for being patient.
It was very
good. Would you like your 2 cents? He's like, no, thank you.
Love it. So tonight, we're going to update you on our sinking fund, and that's our very first one. And the reason why we're going to do an update on the sinking fund and the current bond is that, crazy enough, we have to start talking about and looking at what projects we're going to be doing next summer, okay? We are with the current bond wrapping up the areas at Razorville, Orchard, and then Manor's our last building that's slated for next summer. And the reason we're also doing this right now is because in December, we'll have a recommendation for that work at Manor. And so, of course, we have all this information right here. And so at the same time, Mark is going to speak as we look at this stuff in regards to ADA. Spend time there. And then if there's time, we're going to kind of go through. There's a lot of paper right here in front of you. So what we're going to do is we're going to take and begin here first.
Thank you.
Okay. So this very first top item right there, which is Sinking Fund Projects List, 2026. So if you pop in there, you're going to see a priority one and a priority two, and it's listed by building. And yes, at some point you will, Mark, that we update his computer system to say Hollywood and Canton, which I imagine 15 years ago he had to change them to North and South.
Yeah, I had to get used to that.
Yeah.
So same thing here. You want me to go through this?
If you could. If
yeah,
you could look
sure.
At party one, party two, and how you came about this.
So, so the first sheet here is just kind of a summary. It goes through by each of your buildings along the first column. And then the following columns are priority one, two, and three items with some priority totals. And then we also have items that we work with the school district on to kind of identify different projects that would be recommended for each of the next 3 years. This is just a summary, kind of give you some totals there and where those fall. Priority one items really are your worst items. So those are gonna be items that are possible safety concerns. They're the items that are you need to do something with, or you're gonna leave a school, right? Something like that. Where a school can get shut down for a period if you don't address certain issues. They're the most critical items. Number twos are really more like preventative maintenance, right? They're the items that we see coming up. You can kind of predict, hey, we're going to need to be spending some time on these. If we don't, you're going to have, they're going to be priority one items. And then priority three items, really, they're not priorities necessarily, but they're things that with continued quality of the buildings and are things that would enhance education, right? The next sheet you can see is priority one project. So this is a summary of the project by building, and you can kind of see what those are. Administration building is the first one alphabetically on the list. So a backup generator upgrade. Currently, the generator is not sized properly based on upgrades that have happened at the building. So I'm not sure that it can run the entire building if the building were to go down. Right.
A lot of spending going on back there, and
right.
I don't think it's
and this is a critical building for the district. Right.
It's handling it now. We just handled it last week. But if we maxed every plug out and turned air conditioning on every location, there may be some issues.
So you want to run the air conditioning with a generator?
The way it was installed, because everything wasn't broken down where you could isolate things, it was better to scope it for the whole building.
And for where the servers are at, you cannot not have it.
Well, back there. I was just curious because I looked at some
surprises. concrete walk replacement, there's some areas we've identified our safety issues. HVAC IT room cooling, you see that's a $32,000 cost. Again, that's keeping the IT room, keeping those IT servers working. And then, there's no secret here, but the HVAC system at this building is old, and we've been doing much work to try to just keep it running. It needs to be replaced. So, it is an expensive component, $960,000. Did you want to go through each one of these items? I mean, there's a lot here. And I don't know where you want to spend time or just kind of.
So, well, so this is for your eyes, okay? So you take and peruse it. Know that the biggest takeaway when it comes to city funds is that as we start talking about projects and thinking ahead, is there's some strategies. So, for example, Hollywood needs a boiler, okay? We can afford a boiler, but the unit ventilators, that takes more time, so it's staggering them in. And so some of that work is when we begin to look at the bond, and we have Orchard and Hollywood, I think, are the only two buildings besides this one, right, that are not updated correctly.
The boilers are updated here, just not the HVAC.
HVAC here, okay. And so, some of them, yeah. So Hollywood and Orchard boilers are the ones that oldest is left in the district. Boilers.
Yeah, and I think the middle school unit vents are pretty aged as well.
Yeah. Custer 2.
And Custer 2 as well for unit vents. Boiler's okay over there, yeah, for a few years.
Do you have it broke down on here, like what is bond and what is sinking fund?
Oh, this is all sinking fund.
This is all sinking fund.
Yeah,
so
we're gonna
I thought
get the bond
I saw a bond unit.
Well, some of this stuff, so what I've identified as bond, that was some stuff that was in the previous bond that we ran out of monies to do, and so it got put back into here. So we still carry those items, even though they weren't done, because they need to be done, right?
So priority one sinking fund.
It's going to take a few years, and that's why we'll have to navigate through this using the sinking fund monies to.
So if that's the case, then why are water repairs in priority two? Why wouldn't they be priority one in things related to water?
Because we haven't identified that as.
Critical,
yeah. Just because it's a water item doesn't mean it's a critical item. So
that may not be potable water. That means,
wasn't there a water? Yeah.
Yeah, we did the filter first.
That was
an initiative about the drinking
water.
And that is all that work was done to ensure the drinking water sources for students and staff are all filtered water. And Mr. Payne worked with Thompson's Plumbing, and all that work was completed early spring over the summer once the board.
All the middle school concerns and all that were addressed.
There's still a few things we've noticed here and there, but Thompson's been really good to come back out and fix it. So we just actually met with our skilled trades team. So we're happy with what they did.
If we sell the board field, we don't have to put in $4 million for those renovations, correct? If I can sell up our field, hopefully
you just
we'll
saved
have
us $4 million.
Hopefully tomorrow we'll
awesome.
Have.
Let's make a deal.
Sell it today, please.
Well, if you step back briefly, I talked about the water at the middle school. I want to make sure we bring the clarity. We're talking specifically about the drinking water, like the
yes.
Yeah.
Like that. Well, the
faucet.
Yeah.
You got to remember the sinks, and we start talking about any kind of a future bond. The sinks. That water that's feeding the sinks right there, that's why they go through and they flush the system all the time, is because you've got old pipes over there.
And that's the
yeah.
difference what you're referring to, like if you
well,
look
we
at
walk,
the pipe,
yeah.
not the filters.
We actually walked with the district plumber, and we walked through each building, and Monroe, the middle school, is one of the ones that have been identified for a while, that we know the piping is piping is hard to get to there, right? It's not out the open. It's buried. Some of those walls are 2 feet thick. Like, it's a very difficult building to work on. And it's, so it's a very costly project to
and so the current system that you're utilizing is sufficient because you got the water system.
The end, think of it this way, the end of it's been fixed. We still got the middle and some buildings to
You still have a problem though that your pipes can let go, right? That's the issue. In replacing the water system there, it's the pipes are rusting through, and so they're already spending time fixing piping, probably, you know, several times a year at least, I would guess. I don't know the frequency, even a month. So
those
it's
lead pipes, aren't they? As old as that school is?
No, it's not. I mean, we haven't identified anything like that there.
We tested every water source in the district and approved an additional test, and everything checked 100%. So we're pretty happy with that.
100% safe to drink.
Nothing, no bacteria beyond lead. We did an additional yearly. We'll just start doing mandated by Eagle. We have to do yearly testing. But
so what will happen here is and we're going to keep moving right along, is we're going to get to the bond in a second, is we can't make any decisions on CMO project for next summer until our Manor bids come in. And so the sinking fund helped offset costs at Custer, has helped offset costs in other areas when it comes to the bond, and so it may have to next year offset some costs of finishing the Manor project there, and it may not. We're looking for that money that bids come in here in the next month, and we'll know how much then is free to use. Again, being wise about this, like I said, some of those big items, if you look at the boilers, that's potentially going to be one of the first things, but we can only go so far. We do also work and want to try and keep $1 million in that fund balance. So right now it's been hovering, we're keeping a little bit more than that, but if we keep $1 million in the sinking fund, that allows for anything new that could happen during that school year. Every January, it's our January, February is when the cash is in. So that's why it's replenished. So it's a 1 mil, actually.
It's got to be roughly 2 million-ish.
Right now, in 25 is our adjusted total taxable value was $2.2 billion. So it'll be just about $2.1 million if we get for this.
So,
well,
Mark, I'm looking at priority one here, and I'm looking at the cost of all those on priority one, right? And the real estate financial constraints that exist, or the ability of what we have, is there a item list that is priority within priority one?
No,
does that
priority
make sense?
Priority.
Because we don't have 15 now.
Right. So we just have to pick. Go through priority.
That's what I'm asking. You didn't narrow it down to, hey, these are the top three or the top four. You didn't do that.
We had discussions, Dave and Tim and myself, and my engineer, we had discussions about it, where the most problems are coming from, and also tried to be a little strategic, like Andy was pointing out, where, like, you know, the unit vents and boilers need to be done over at Arborwood, Hollywood, right? So, but you can't afford to do the whole school in 1 year. So how would we do it? Well, you think about, like, let's replace the boiler first, because that affects the whole school. If the unit vents go out, just affects the classroom or so. So that was kind of our thinking as we're starting to put some of this together and try to lay this out in multiple years, to be a little strategic in that way, just to kind of minimize some risks. Also cut down on some of your ongoing expenses that you have for maintenance at these facilities. Keep in mind, this does not include future stuff that's coming up as well. Like, I was just looking through our roofing report of these schools, and warranty-wise, in the next 2 or 3 years, we have a lot of roofs starting to come out of warranty. Doesn't mean you have to replace them, right? The roofs are still probably going to be good, but what it signifies is that you're going to start having some problems, and we always like to take care of problems before they become bigger. You know, you start getting roof leaks, who knows what's going to impact. It could impact servers, it could impact lots of equipment and other learning spaces.
Well, so, if they come off warranty, then we have to pay the cost.
Well, you do, but it doesn't mean, like I said, our experience is you get a few years still after the warranty, maybe 5 or so, but just know that we have a lot of roofs that are starting to come out of warranty, and it's going to start a whole nother roof cycle again. We did this about 25 years ago, or 30 years ago, we started replacing a lot of the roofs. The roofs were really bad in this district, and spent about 10 years doing that. The unfortunate thing to that is all the warranties start coming up like boom, boom, you know, right in a row again. So again, just something to be thinking about. It's not an emergency, nothing like that. It's just that these things continue to build, right? And that's why we just want to point them out that, hey, we need to pay attention to this here. And it makes the bigger conversation that I think we're going to have next more important.
So there's items that you all have narrowed down some, and here's the way I'm looking at it. I don't know what that list is, and maybe beneficial for us to know that, but I'm looking at it going, okay, we've identified the $960,000 to address the HVAC here in the administrative building, and we're looking at approximately $3 million to be able to utilize within the next year because we want to keep $1 million in the balance. Right there's one of it. And so I'm trying to gather, like, what are your thoughts on this item? Because this is I know what this is, but what is that? What is the other, like, what is the priority that you all are seeing? Do you see that as a priority and available, or do you see the CR unit vent replacement at because the arbor is on here for 1.7? Yeah.
So if you flip to page 3 of 6 first, this will help. Okay, so page 3 of 6, if you get down to the very bottom, which is district-wide, that is annually about $450,000 allocated so we can address carpet, we can address any roof maintenance, we can address paving and sidewalk work. So that's like an allocation right there of that. So then we get, if you go back, Darla, in there.
So knock that off.
So knock it off. So then you're exactly right. Once we, for this next year, Manor comes in, we know how much Manor's project is.
But that's fine.
That's fine, but if we know that it's going to be very close. Okay.
So we may need a couple hundred thousand.
Might have to
do some sinking funds.
Which we did.
That's probably waiting.
Okay.
So now we're up to 700,000 of my 3 months. We're still sitting with 2.3.
So where we went, then we started looking at it.
December, or no, no, the approval in December, but
yeah.
Was it, we had a mandatory pre-bid meeting here.
Wednesday is the mandatory pre-bid meeting. 2 weeks later, we'll have bids the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, whatever day that is. We'll have bids for Manor.
Yep. So we'll bring that package in front of you at the December board meeting.
Okay.
So to get to your point, so when we go through here, then we start to strategize saying, okay, based off the conversations in this room, because if the conversation in the room, as we talk in that next phase around their, and so let's just hop there quickly of around a futuristic bond. And if it's like, yep, that is not, you know, there's a lot of like, nope, ain't going to happen. And I'll just re-channel and say, okay, no bond in the near future. And when we say in the near future, we're talking about, I think next November definitely gone. So you're talking about May of 27. No projects until summer of 28. I mean, that you're already saying, you know, knocking out 28 before anything happens. Is, well, what on here do you need to tackle? So that's, if we're thinking ahead, okay, we'll tackle the boilers in these two buildings over the next 2 years while doing this other stuff, and then think about what was described with the roof. Or, again, if there's no bonds, I'll go, hey, then the boilers are number one, because the boilers go down, we are done in the.
Do we have any other unrestricted funds that could be utilized for anything on these lists? Because we talked about the general fund being a lot of unrestricted. So being it's unrestricted, is there a way to allocate it towards some of these items?
technically speaking, if you wanted to allocate some of your unrestricted fund balance, you could make a transfer over to your capital projects fund or your sinking fund, but then you have to keep in mind that once it's there, it can't go back.
Which if we're looking at these items and you're saying we have to have some of these done, like we have to have the domestic water replacement, 1.7 million on this one, 1.3 million on that one, 900,000 on this one. If some of those things you come to me and you say, hey, these are things we have to do right now, then that I just want to know what possibility we have to make that happen.
And if you're asking me if we have extra money in the general fund to supplement, we don't.
Well, there's always a redistribution. You can always do a redistribution of the allocated funds. That's
no.
Always a mistake. Yeah, you can. Why can't you?
So if you're moving funds from the general fund to the sinking fund or capital project, then it stays there.
Right, I understand that.
Do you though? Because you're not letting me finish. So, but once it's there, you cannot transfer it back should you have a shortfall in your general fund.
I understand that.
And there's not, we don't have an excessive high fund balance right now that we can, in my opinion, afford to move funds over to those capital projects, because then you're going to exacerbate the cash flow problem with the way the general fund funding comes through.
State probably wouldn't allow us to do that, correct? Being we're on
that would be something that they would question as to why we would be doing that.
Yeah. They can't get off it, but they certainly
right. They would certainly have.
Well, I also look at what we spend our money on. I mean, you can always look at what you spend your money on in your household expenses or any kind of expenditure and say, what do we need to spend our money on? You know what I mean? If you're telling me, like, if something doesn't get done and something happens at school, well, you're not even going to have school, right? Good possibility. If something negative happens. I mean, it could happen at any given time, right? And you're not even going to have school. So, you know, when I look at priorities and I look at what we're spending our money on, and it's unfortunate that anybody.
This list, though, before the bond was...
It's even larger.
Has been going on for a while. So it's every year you have to basically, what you just said, take your priority ones and shrink it to what you can afford based on the most important. And like Mr. Shaw said, if you're going to put domestic water in the middle school, but you're going to move it possibly or change something, I would hold off on that one as long as you
can.
No,
I was just reading.
You know what I mean?
I'm
like,
just reading what's on
Yeah,
here.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Some of it's strategic.
Some of it you just continue. We're just going to continue to patch, right? When a problem comes up, we'll patch it. We'll spend whatever it takes to patch it. We're not going to spend that expense, and that's how you get through it. Sometimes it doesn't work, or sometimes it gets to the point where you can't do that anymore. Right? You can't just keep patching. So these are just a list. We talk about this every year, go through it, try to strategize, and come up with the best projects to move forward with. Some of these, page 7 of 26, has what we put together as a proposed project, so that's the summary there. Some of these, I'm going to tell you, it's probably too late to move forward with them anyway at this point. Like, I don't think we can get a multi-zone unit for this building. Doesn't mean we shouldn't move forward with it to do it the following year, but some of this equipment takes a little while to get, you know. And so, like that one, I would say at this point, let's just do it the following year, but let's say we're going
to
do it.
Yeah,
right. So we start making those decisions sometimes now, for a couple of years out.
It's a zone of the HVA system. It's not related to the zone of the property as far as with the
HVA. Yeah. So the zoning is it's a unit that will be able to.
Terry likes it really warm.
Keep the conference room a different temperature from let's say the other side of the building. Keep them consistent.
I'm hanging out there.
I'm really warm right now.
So if we go do any work inside this building, you go put $1 million in this building, you're not putting it somewhere else. For example, plus Hollywood doesn't look good. No, but this building functions all year long, and so that's the, it's, we're presenting to you the challenges.
Understood.
Okay, and we want you to see that there, we will be bringing forth some recommendations here. Once we get these information in there, most likely when we talk in December, we'll already have some ideas like, okay, here's the things we should be looking at doing, because we'll have to put Mark put a scope of work together and we can get it done.
So this is for us to have a point of reference.
We're
going to come back.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say we go through these.
No. This is just a point of reference that you guys have that.
What's the cost of
that? Yeah.
Where
are
you at?
What
page?
We still have three left. Manor or Raisinville and Orchard got bumped.
They were
supposed to be part of the bond, but we had to pull them. So they're going to get done out of sinking fund, and Manor's getting done this summer.
Okay, I'm looking at total, so my number just changed again.
That's what I mean, and by next Tuesday.
I just noticed that.
So rushing ahead, this next document, you did see this in your board briefs, okay? If you just go to the very last page, this is a running total of the bond. And so we get down to the very last bottom right hand corner of page 404. You see right now we have $1.8 million to go. Yep, this one right here, 404, bottom right corner. So that's the money that is allocated for Manor. Note too that there's still revenue coming in, revenue is interest, okay, and it's not going to be an astronomical amount. But you can see, if you go across that, we were able to generate interest almost $1.8 million over the life of this project, of the bond that's there. And so this is one of those items I just wanted you to be aware that when we start looking at, okay, how much does the Manor project come in, then, you know, pretty much if it came in at $2 million, okay, well, it's pretty close. What's that? That's how much money is left of bond. That's, so when we are done, when we get to next year at this time, that bond fund is done. It's going to get audited one more time after that. And then
and that's already going to have
it. So the 1.8 at the bottom is what hasn't been allocated to projects that were already approved.
Right.
That's what is available to allocate for Manor.
So we can pull stuff off this list that you said there wasn't money for?
Oh, no. This money, this 1.8, is for the Manor project. That's the last part of the bond that
so
we said we were going to get done.
Correct.
Yep.
And the RFP request is out, and I believe there's a pre-bid meeting there's a pre-bid meeting this week, so we'll have an idea of who's going to bid. But the bids aren't due for another couple weeks after that.
Yeah.
So we'll soon know how much the project is going to be, but I don't know how, like, until we get that, we don't know how much, if any, we'll have to supplement with sinking funds. Because Manor will most likely be a project.
I think it's projected, though, that we will have to supplement. We'll have to supplement somehow from the sinking fund.
Just the amount we don't know until it gets in. But I'm not confident that the 1.8 is sufficient for the amount of work that should be done. But the degree is going to depend on where the bid comes from.
Based on prior bidding, there is no way.
It's hard to tell with market conditions. I'll tell you this, though. We have had a lot of interest, so that's always good.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
A lot of interest. I think we're going to have several bidders that are
going to
be walking. That's always good news. But it doesn't always tell you that what the market conditions are. I mean, as far as costs.
So the challenge with Manor, just so you guys understand it, was the last project in the whole system, okay? And so you go back to the beginning, which, looking around the room, there's only a handful of that end that was part of the bond at the very beginning, and so things got added in at the beginning, all right? And so now, though, what we have to do is we have to look at what we did in all the buildings and not Hose Manor, okay? And so that's why there's a small addition going on. So there's one for the secured entrance, but two, you've been in Manor, they have their office space, they don't have there. So that's why Manor is really similar to what we did at Custer. So Custer was the one that got it going, okay, that said, hey, we need to do these right. And so that's why, you know, Manor, it could have been really low scale, just update the offices, you know, and left alone for the little secure vestibule on. But it would have been putting good money over bad because we wouldn't have gotten the end results that we really need.
Which is like
very much. That's exactly it. So if you go to the next document right here, in your packet, it should be right underneath it, is this document right here goes through and it just lays out what happens in the bond, you know, what the bond monies are used for. I think you get the page 404, that very last one. It dives into projects removed, so the operation center, so the bus parking lot switch again, all buildings, mass notification tying. So when we have that on there, we're tying them in, but that's the next phase of mass notification, okay? But then
using what money?
We're not.
They're removed.
That was removed. Okay. We still have mass notification with the tying in that next phase.
Well, mass notification, that's been removed too, because it starts here by the name.
Yeah, maybe it's all those. So then you get down there where Esther stepped in and did a lot of work. And so that's why we said when we started thinking back to holistically about the safety fund, of like, all right, well, then we're down to two buildings needing boilers. It made sense to get those in there and then start staging out the unit vents and getting those buildings updated that way. And so that's why the Esther fund really moved the needle for us. So in our last meeting, Darla asked a really good question around what do other in our system, what are the municipalities, what's being collected taxes, okay? And so this next diagram is the deployment of money. So if you look down there, I was highlighted. The big one I want to turn to is if you just go past the first two pages, we gotta get past the first page. And I don't want to use Exeter because we want to look at Frenchtown. Frenchtown. I know. So Frenchtown is the best one to look at. So when we look at Frenchtown, because Exeter right here, if you look at Exeter, you go down, you're gonna see 01. That's Monroe Public Schools. Okay. So for Exeter Township, there's only $57 million worth of taxable value Exeter Township that are reclaimed.
Small.
We're a small bunch of French towns. Oh, $420 million is the cash flow value that we have.
Oh, yeah.
So if you look down this list, so if we, let's look at Frenchtown. We're going to walk down through that one. You're going to see that Frenchtown Township, total property taxes levied is $47 million. Okay? And then you can break it down by how much goes to township, fire, all their stuff. And then you can break it down into what does Monroe Public Schools get from Frenchtown. And that's the 01 area. So, Darla, back to your question is like, in each of our townships, what is being levied in each township? Okay, so each one's a little different. So, for example, if Erie Township is part of Monroe, their page is about half as long as this. They don't levy anything down there. Okay? So this document right here will walk you through so you can see, okay, what each township is paying.
So our village rate at Frenchtown is?
So ours is all 1 mil for the sinking fund, 1.5 mils for the bond. That is it.
So it's 2.5.
Okay.
That's where the 2.5 is coming
in. When you get down into commercial, it's 6 mils.
The amount that allocated to was the 1.
Yeah, so if you go across there, you can see in the 24 year that from Monroe's public was $1 million. Yep. And then.
And that's for the debt, which is the sinking and then the debt millage to pay the bond.
Yep.
It's the 2.5.
Yep.
And then that's
actually, I did not.
And then the commercial personal is our operating levy, which is only levied at 6 mils. And the 18 mils was our general non-homestead levy at 18 mils, which is principal residencies are exempt, that's businesses and
that's which each of these townships.
Yeah, so each township, okay, but remember that it's, when you get into the commercial, personal, and the non-homestead, those are totally different. But it gets down to what each township, and now remember too, though, that's only the people that reside in the Monroe Public Schools area. What are you seeing right there? Okay, for each township.
Are the mistake, they just sold the golf course, they want to put in the data center.
Yep.
Would we benefit?
So, the answer is only in potential maybe services, but because our, we're not.
That side of Dixie is government.
Yeah.
That's what I was getting at.
However, the data centers impact not just French Town, they impact the entire county.
Or electric bill go up, that'll help.
It depends on the arrangement.
I just wanted to be.
Okay.
Like the Celine.
Sorry.
Celine got 14 million. Are they allocating that money? I'm not sure how they're allocating it, but.
I'm not sure.
They already said yes.
They did, okay.
As far as I'm finding.
So, yeah. So.
Would any subject fill the lingo?
Yes.
Did you hear yes?
You're saying for French Town Township, right?
Yes.
But that area, that piece of property is in the Jefferson School District, so they would receive that, like, of their 18 mil levy, they would receive that from that property. That's not in our.
So the positive, I've gotta get verified tomorrow, we have trustee McHugh, who you're telling on Friday, okay, good news, between Dixie and Telegraph, north of Stewart, south of Mall Road, there's a big piece of property over there, that there's supposed to be 500 home, so I'm going to have a conversation with the French Town to confirm that that is going to happen, because if that is based, and I've heard this like 2 years ago, it's like, is this going to happen when they break it down? As long as they put kids in them, okay, and have, it's going to have a taxable value, so the kids are happy. So, but this should help, I wanted to give this to you, okay? I haven't, that's why I want to find out. Because I've heard stories on this too. So that's for your information there. And then the next two documents are, again, just for your information. And this is put together by TFM, so to kind of show, okay, what different schools are doing in our area. And then that last document is our taxable value history. Know that. The last part of our conversation tonight is I've asked Mark to begin working up the elementary search, the K-4 buildings. So we saw, like, the accuracy of a number for, okay, what's it going to take to finish these buildings off? So, for example, having, like, the stage where Waterloo's at, so from there in each of these buildings. And then from there, our big conversation and has to hover around the future of Monroe Middle School. Do we keep Monroe, you know, investment? That's where I wanted to have Mark just take a moment here and talk about, you know, he's walked at school about how many times did you say behind the scenes?
Oh, a lot, yeah.
I mean, a lot.
So 25 years worth, probably.
Yeah,
it's a lot. That's a very difficult building.
So
talk about the way it's constructed. Well, the big things, and we touched on this a little bit, you know, it's hard, like the domestic water, sanitary, those pipes are rusting, it's hard to get through them. They need to be replaced. Unit vents in that building also need to be replaced. They're getting to that age. Probably some piping to the unit vents as well. Getting through those walls are difficult. Two foot thick walls, all masonry. It's extremely expensive. It's the biggest reason why that building was chosen not to move forward with bond projects in this last bond because of the cost. And there's a substantial, you know, the benefit was that money could be better spent somewhere else, especially with all the escalation that went on. Somebody asked me about air conditioning in that building, and we ran some just real preliminary budgets, but just to put it cheap, I shouldn't say cheap, inexpensive air conditioning system in, so a very basic air conditioning system, about $49. It doesn't do anything to your shell to improve energy efficiencies and install insulation. So you would be also cooling and spending extra on energy costs for putting cooling in that building. It's a very difficult building all around to do much with every time we touch it. It's a great building. I love walking in.
You gotta love
I think it, yeah, fantastic. Right, we've got some site issues as well, but it's a cool building from an architectural perspective. And there's a ton of history there too, right? And we all know
it's
how difficult.
We get buried in history though, it's fine.
Yeah.
So the question I have for our board members is, because many of you have lived in this community your whole life, and your relatives have been here their whole life and generations, is, if Monroe Public School, we make a decision to step away from the middle school and do something different, where do you think the community stands? Because, if it's not being repurposed, that building at some point in time would have to come down. And then back to what Mark was describing, who takes over that property anyways, knowing that needs to have to upgrade and there's no air. And so it's just one of those things that as we talk through this, there's a lot around that middle school that becomes of a question. I'm going to talk with Mark on that more. He and I have had a couple of conversations on it.
Well, I'm not suggesting that would be that would be my thing.
Yeah. What I don't know is, and this goes back to you all been here, is, it's one thing to go ever went to the voters and said, we want to do this, and they're going to go ahead to the middle school, it's going to be torn down. Hold on, you're taking a 100-year-old building and...
Remember, you just went back to original name assumption that tells you the temperature of the historical connection that people have with the education system, because I think people are still mourning Lincoln lost.
Oh, Lincoln and Christian C. Absolutely.
Yep.
And we just took down an old part of things about Black Rock High School, and there was a big push to save that. They tried to. There was a group that came up and actually wanted to save it, and they were going to let them until they figured it out. It's just costly. But there's motions,
That's what he talked about, the temperature of Monroe, those are current things that have just transpired that tell you what the current mode is.
Something to the community college millage, which went down, is also another indicator that until economic conditions improve, it's going to be tough.
And I think that one's an indicator, too, of making sure that your board is in alignment.
And do better marketing job.
That's very important.
And I also think that, yes, I understand the importance of history and like that building, which I don't know if you've ever taken a peek in the auditorium behind the drop ceiling. There's reliefs and stuff back there. Beautiful architecture. So I fully understand. However, I feel like the scope of updating that building, I don't know if our community understands the massive amount of money that we would be asking for them to invest. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think it might be prohibitive. And that's a delicate conversation to have, right? Because yes, honoring history is important, and preserving history is also important, but also being able to do that within the means of our community is also what we're here to do.
My impression, and Gary, you can jump in, because we went there towards the end of when it was being used, and to be honest, I have no desire to try and maintain that building. It was, we were on the third floor, it was incredibly hot in the late spring and early fall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those of us who suffered there probably are going to say, let's get rid of it.
And there's also ways to
Well, you were there, Cindy. Why are you being quiet? You big phony, you.
I was there. I loved it. It was hot, but you know what? I just saw a segment on Channel 4 News about Lake Orion just donated their old high school to the city, and they're going to make it livable for seniors. Well, we kept all the history from Christiancy and Lincoln. We kept all the memorabilia. I really think that if we did something with it, if that's what you guys choose to do, we could really take a piece of it and incorporate the history of Monroe Public Schools. Like when you go to the Mother House, they've got the artifacts that show where the history of the district or the building has been. We have that would be a golden opportunity to showcase all the signage, all the things that we have in those trailers. We have one trailer full, right, or two. One trailer out in the back full of all of those memorabilia from those buildings, plus all the stuff you could put from Monroe Middle. I mean, that's just, I think it's a good remembrance. There's a lot of Lincoln stuff, too. Yeah, a lot of Lincoln stuff.
So since our last meeting, I've been doing a lot of thinking around the pace and the mindset of how to move forward. That's why I said, like, November of 26 is really off the table. And the rationale being is that the middle school is a factor. And so you have to have a lot of meetings, have to do a lot of stuff, have conversations. And at the nearest time that would make sense for this district to look at an election in May of 27, it doesn't. So going from November to May, all it shifts is your start date still June of 28. So it doesn't change that, okay? It allows for a lot of information gathering and a lot of conversations to really lay out what's the best plan. Because then the conversation comes up far. Well, if the middle school is not there, then where are the 7th and 8th graders? And what does that all look like? And what are the true options that people can live with there and or not live with?
So in that conversation, so again, I'm looking for all the logs on the fire.
Yep.
So one of those would be the longevity of what you believe the current environment is. So if someone comes into my house and they say, I think your heating unit or your air conditioning is probably getting another 5 years. So plan that in 5 years, around there, barring anything. So where are we sitting?
Well, I mean, there's no definite, no definitives, right? I mean, they're repairing that domestic water piping quite often over there as leaks occur.
So it's you the could maintenance.
Have a, you could watch. Have a, yeah, you could have a catastrophic failure, though.
And we could have that anywhere.
Yeah, but you're more likely to have them on systems that you know are not working or have problems. The unit vents, same thing. They're not all probably not all going to go down. Some of them should be more maintenance on you. The continued maintenance, so at some point if it's costly, and that continues to build, and you don't get anything out for it, right? It's just you're extending the time, is all.
Which is really, sometimes that's all you need.
Right, absolutely, you're right.
Yeah, I'm just suggesting that if we could extend for a period of time, we'd be able to take, because there's a lot of mentions right now of possibility of big.
I think you absolutely can keep sticking money into that building. It might be a viable building for you guys to keep. I mean, you're going to put a lot of money into it to keep it. You guys have to make that choice, right? Is it better to do that, or is it better to maybe, can we use that money in a way that we can solve another problem?
I think, first of all, it's community's choice. But second of all, I think we're going to talk about some buildings that didn't make it. I think the feeling about Monroe Public Schools and the community. How do people feel about Monroe Public?
Yeah.
If it's good, building chances are much better.
Oh, yeah.
If it's not good, building chances are not very well.
True. Yeah.
So yeah. I think that we talked about the board being aligned, all that stuff, that's true, but the community, how do they feel about Monroe Public?
Yeah, that's a whole other part.
It's another log in the fire,
yeah.
Probably three of them.
Yeah.
But
I think why this conversation is important, one is the pool is a factor, okay? That's, put that on the table, but
we're not talking about that. We're talking about 7th and 8th grade, I thought.
But the bond
was for 7th and 8th grade.
No. The idea
idea, the Pat, the thoughts are this, is we will be asked, if we go forward with a bond.
About the pool.
About the middle school. No, they're gonna ask about, cause I already had a parent last year raising it. No.
Yeah, but.
I'm saying it's all linked together.
Yeah, but it is, cause I can tell you, Dick, or Rick, Carter, he's gonna ask, if you're gonna do a bond, what are you doing on the pool? And there's a group.
That's a legitimate question.
It's a legit.
But how would the middle school play a role?
And at the same time, there are parents, and I know this, cause last year when we were doing, going around and talking about the redesign, there was a parent said, what are you gonna do about the middle school? We need to have a conversation about the future of the middle school. No, but it's a question that'll come up, and if we go, here's the other question you would have, is if all your building, your elementaries are all aired up, cause that's, they're very close, and you finish, your high school is, and you don't do anything in the middle school, then you ask that question. But down the road.
Like, I just don't hear that being part of the conversation, the pool, yes.
I think it's just, you have to acknowledge it, that's all I'm saying, acknowledge it. And so we start talking, because at the end of the day, to Mark's point is, we may come up with an idea around a two-phase approach over a 10-year run on this whole project too. So there's some ideas out there, but where ultimately this goes is that, we should be just thinking in terms of, how to best bring back the next piece of information for you, so you can then start going, okay, like I said, November 26th is gone, this.
Well, the 4 years gone, we would need to be having another discussion, because we have a whole bunch of stuff that needs to be on our work session.
These are all, but no, there's, this is an important part, I'm gonna get to this point really quickly for you, is this. There's a school straight south of us that did nothing, okay? And they're going to be feeling a lot of pain in the years, cause they can't get a bond passed.
Yeah.
We're fortunate here, we did, okay, back to your point. And so, and I will even say after living in the Asian community for so long, I mean, they invested in that 25 since, right around, about 98 forward, right around $150 million into their, all the events. And their buildings are phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
This community has invested a lot since, I think it's 92 when they passed St. Francis. They already invested a lot. So,
Owen, you had those numbers.
No, Owen, I just knew that because I live in that community. Okay? And voted on those. So well, you look at this community invested, how much was that bond 5 years ago?
About 69.
69. So then you go over that time period of 30 years, so you're talking in tune of
probably about
$120 million. You know, but
you the same fund. All?
They're only the same fund one bond.
Adrian, so
well,
there's only been
bond.
Two bonds?
That's a millage. No, they've only been one bond every year.
Yeah. In all those years, it started in the 90s.
It's the regional enhancement.
Safety fund.
It's not technology.
I know
the
regional
enhancement.
Safety fund started in the 90s. But I think there's only one bond.
Well,
I don't know.
So we can find out.
Last 47 years. They couldn't pass the bond to build the new high school.
Right.
They built it and kicked people off.
Yeah, that was back then.
It was the way they built it.
75. I was voted. Yeah, I was there.
People voted against
it. I'm just saying, they didn't help us all how they built it as well.
Getting on their own.
Yeah.
I would say that still temperature gauge is still high on that one, it sounds like.
Yeah. But the where I'm going is that we're
gauging the temples of
it's hot in this room.
Don't bring that one up, shall we?
It is very warm.
So I mean, my last point is I know, I want to be there too.
You're wearing me out, so I don't have to go through that.
So
the process of this.
More to come with a bond, all that. Mark, can you please address ADA in our district right now? And how we've been addressing that,
we're going to make a decision whether, so I remember when we first started talking about the bond, that the conversation was, we as a board will decide if we want to continue having that conversation. And that was at the first meeting, and I think we're on meeting 3 or 4. So do we
that's
want
what he's saying is that we've run out of time to get it on the ballot for next week.
I understand that.
I think
so
your
my question is,
more
is do we, but only because there's only so many things you can put on a work session, and there is a list of things that need to be put on there. Do we want to keep taking up know, we as a board decide whether that moves forward. That's the only way it goes forward. So do we want to keep spending our time on that right now, or do we want to prioritize some of the other topics?
But
that's my question.
It's not immediate now that we're not going to do it in November next year, but probably the first half of next year at some point we would address
it. Okay. So let's clear our schedule of that for the time.
It's, that's what I said.
Thank you.
I think it's really important for the community, the public, to realize how much money would have to go into the middle schools and even going. So if we could get like those numbers in comparison to what we're thinking about.
Yeah, but the bond's not to put a 7th and 8th grade in. So
But the whole idea is this, that sometimes with a bond, you're always looking at how you can make it so that your system costs your general fund less money, okay? The middle school costs us a lot of money.
Yes.
And so is there a different mechanism to bring that cost down while still advancing our system?
And bringing the cost up to the community. I mean, that's a trade-off.
Well, that's always a trade-off, unfortunately.
Right,
But at some But the other part is, at the end of the day, this may not be the board that makes a decision, but you have a 100-year-old building in the middle school that some board is going to have to give to the community to decide what to do with it.
And it's like Social Security, just keep kicking the can down the road.
Keep it kicking it down.
Well, I don't think the suggestion is that, but it's the prioritization of what time we have available. Things, you know, it's difficult to get a lot of things on our agenda right now. We have a bunch of things that are sitting there. So I would like to prioritize to get those things.
But we've had out each month, 3 months run, of the topics.
But tonight's meeting was only supposed to be one topic and two others got added. And so, because tonight
was always about bond and facilities.
So, on this calendar, tonight was facilities and pool options for tonight's meeting. That was the only thing that
which
was
is
on the schedule.
Facilities, bond, it's all integrated.
I'm just showing you what's on here. There was only one thing.
Thank you for having me.
I'm not saying we shouldn't add it, I'm just saying.
Margaret, can you please?
Sure. So, I guess I'll start with this, and I'll maybe just take some questions from you guys, because I've heard a lot of different things about ADA and handicap stuff. And I'll start with this. So we really have, when we look at ADA and handicap, there's two mechanisms kind of that we look through. So one is our code, our building codes, okay? So they tell us that when we touch a building, or when we build a new building, they have to be built to a certain standard, all right? There's handicap requirements in there. So anytime we do that, that happens. Now, if we touch an existing building, we may not be able to bring that totally up to handicap standards, okay? But we do so because it's probably either technically infeasible or it's in conflict with another code. And that's why that happens. And there's some of those cases throughout the district where that's happened. A couple of them I can say are some of the toilet rooms that we've touched and brought up to code or brought up to, refreshed. We were not able to bring up to handicap standards, because you lose toilet fixtures. Toilet fixtures are a certain number of minimum fixtures are required in a school based on occupant load. And so because those are in conflict, we can't eliminate fixtures. We can't fix one part of the code to eliminate another. That's not allowed, all right? If there are some things in the district that are not up to code, based on handicap standards, you're grandfathered in, right? Until you touch those again, you don't have to bring them up to code, all right? That's the code part. The other part is ADA. ADA was enacted back in 1990, and it says that you need to provide equal access to all, right? And I personally think there's two parts to this. There's a risk part to the district for not doing it, but there's also a human dignity part, right? And that becomes real evident, especially if the district were to be sued, that's the route that they take in the suit, right? You're not providing equal access. Somebody was embarrassed, felt less than equal, felt less than, and that's usually the course it takes. And what they say is, in those suits, is why haven't you been able to update this particular thing since 1990 when this was enacted? So it is an important thing for the district to look at from that point of view, right? And I think from both of those points of view, from a human dignity part, as well as from a kind of a risk management part. However, it's very difficult to update everything, right? To make everything handicap accessible. And it covers a broad range. There's usually two things that impact this. One is it technically feasible to do it? So in other words, do you have the space? Can you make it happen? And the second part is the cost. Can the district afford it? That becomes harder the more time you move away from 1990. That second part becomes a lot harder to defend, because what happens is they pull you in and they say, I want to see all your books since 1990, right? And you got to prove to me now that you couldn't have afforded it. I think the best policy for the district is, when those items come up, is to address them. And as far as I know, they always have. The district's been great. I know several instances where Tim Salenbeam has created handicap spots for somebody closer to an area that they need to be in a school, because the handicap spot was too far away. So we created one. Right, made it easier for them to get into the building. For another example is the bleachers at the high school, a pretty recent one. I think there was a student who had made some complaints. He felt he wasn't being provided equal access. He had to sit in a different area of the stadium. It wasn't that you guys weren't providing access there. It was that he didn't feel it was equal.
He couldn't sit with a band.
He couldn't sit with a student. His student
that
peers,
was what came
right?
Down.
And that's
and we're very fortunate they never brought a lawsuit.
Well,
if they would have brought a lawsuit, I think we would have lost vision.
And I think that's.
But it's human dignity. Your point about human dignity is, let's take the lawsuit equation out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's a better way to follow. Right. I think that's the way the school district has always done it, because my conversations with Julie Everly at the time was just that. Like, she really wanted to make sure that, you know, what can we do to make this happen? And plans were put in place at that time. We had come up with several different options, you know, on how to solve the issue. And eventually, monies were set aside, and that happened.
Well, you started with a ramp, and a ramp wasn't equal access. You had to get to the cutout point. That's where you had to get to.
Yeah.
That's equal access. So everybody thought you had a ramp. Ramp means nothing if you can't get a wheelchair
right
into the area. So I'm not gonna say Monroe did a stellar job in making that happen. They drug their feet a little bit on that, in my opinion. And maybe it was because of cost, right? Could have been. I wasn't there, on the board. I do remember being in the meetings when Jude would and his parents would come forth. So we finally got to the right spot, but it took a while to get to the right spot.
Well,
that was the only kid that was in a wheelchair. The way I look at it is, we're all sitting here, and a lot of us are parents, right?
Yeah.
Put yourself in the perspective of, you have a kid that is in a wheelchair.
So
that changes the conversation a little bit.
So when we think about the rest of our buildings and area, you know, I know the gymnasium got brought up. So the only thing in the high school gym that we don't have is that you typically would see in new bleacher systems are a spot where the bleacher can be recessed back in.
Right.
Okay. Otherwise, that's the only thing we don't have.
Right. otherwise it was that gym. And then what's the worst part about that is, when we think about using Jude as an example there, we would have to be, when we go do something like that in the future, I know that's one of our items that we want to look at, is that features in there, is putting that system in the exact location for kids at, because I know when we did it down at Erie Mason, they just put them in different spaces, and they're sure that, you know, that they could be recessed back if we had some coming in that was in a wheelchair.
Because you also have parents that are, and grandparents that are doing the events too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so
you don't want to be part of the action. I have no idea how we had them, we had them lined up along the fence line. Seems like to me a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Football players running into the people in wheelchair. And
I mean, you know, how far do you go though, right?
Sure.
I think that's a conversation you guys have to have,
yes.
Right? Do you get the press box? No access to the press box if somebody in a wheelchair, right? I don't know of any other school districts so that have like elevators to the press box. But and that's usually what happens, right? You take the priority. So
sure.
it's first you start with the thing that affects the largest number of people. You make sure that they have access from the point that they get onto your site to the building or to the area they need to go. You make sure that's all handicapped accessible.
I've never used the restroom. I'm sorry to make a big point out loud over there, but are there spaces there for people in wheelchairs?
Yeah, there's a.
I didn't know if there was or not.
Yeah.
At the football field.
Yeah.
I just, because you mentioned it, and I thought about it.
Situation, the football field should be analyzed. When you look at, when you look at Adrian and you go to Sunny Lincoln, they built a nice area.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of bathrooms in there, and we're still living in the age where we got a urinal and one stall up there in the men's, or two.
Never been in there.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah,
we just had two confessions.
There you go.
We know that, but we do know that. There's no doubt that the ration facilities, that whole area out there, they can use some
water. Right, I mean,
you're basing off all the whole system.
Exactly.
Right. System.
Right. So you put $1 million football field there in people's minds, and then you're going to have to go back and say, you know what, we really need a concourse. I think people would raise their hands, both hands, when people have to attend events there and go to a lot of events there. Because, like I said, there's almost no school district that you go to now where they don't have that built in. The concession stand, everything built into a locker room.
Yep. But that's why, to your point, when we were at high school in particular, and at the bathrooms right there across from the auditorium, we were just going one for one.
I know.
Right. And that's when, that spring,
yep.
And John Ray goes, you know, we can't hold a and,
yep.
And all of a sudden, we're hitting air brakes and asking Mark and his group, redesign this so we can actually do it the right way.
Right.
And now you look at what we have
there. Right.
It's great. A lot.
So what's your focus on ADA?
Well, I'm sorry.
What's your focus on the ADA?
As far as how do you, my focus,
I don't know what the conversation was intended to be.
Well, I think it's just a bigger it's a bigger discussion in general for just to give you guys some maybe perspectives on what you're dealing with. It's because I hear a lot of times, like, we're grandfathered in, right? And from the code, you are. From ADA, you're not. And there's just a lot of misperceptions there, because one is ADA is driven by the legal system.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way it really matters is if you get sued, right? That's where that's the threat that forces you to do the ADA. Now, there's also the human dignity part, which we're talking about.
The inclusiveness part, but we should
to
feel,
me,
as a board, we feel better about being inclusive to
absolutely.
People.
Did
absolutely.
You identify in this conversation, prior to this, areas where you feel that would be something that we should look at, or was just an education?
No, I don't think that there's necessarily any particular areas. I would say if there are, it would be good to know about, because then we can address them or we can come up with a plan.
Before
to
we
me,
start allocating here.
To me, it's coming up with a plan, right?
Right.
Once they're identified, like, how do we solve that issue? Is it solvable, and what does it take to solve that?
When you said we got to, Tim, and Dave would know best the buildings what is or isn't. Are we suggesting that you can't do that or
as far as
so like identifying the
a first step is to identify
right.
Is it even a matter if you're in a wheelchair if there's no heat? You know what I'm saying? So
I think
we do.
Doing that.
Yeah.
At the high school, we put in
absolutely
single in Waterloo. We converted
sure.
that bathroom by changing the
Hollywood.
Door,
yeah,
floor.
we actually made the so that's cool. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Adding
when
a lot of door openers.
We
make it more convenient.
We fixed those things because the staff didn't have a handicap toilet room.
Yeah.
They do now.
Yeah. Now at Manor, I don't know with the bond work coming up at Manor.
Yeah.
Is that something?
Yeah.
There's a bathroom right in the new.
Yeah, those two toilet rooms will be handicap accessible. We're adding one in the admin area next to the nurses. So that's another private.
So it'd be students and staff that would each have, or are you talking shared space?
At Manor, there's current multi-user toilet rooms
mm-hmm.
that are being updated. And then there's two staff restrooms that are being updated as well. And then there is, in addition to that, we're adding one additional one in the admin offices.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So I think we're interesting
I just think when we do that, we maybe should be a little more publicized about it. So we know, so the community knows that, everybody knows that you're taking those steps.
Yeah.
That would be helpful.
How we're using the money to.
Yes.
But to your point, there is nothing as glaring as like the football stadium
sure.
that has been brought to our attention. Like,
right.
hey, you've got to do something here. There's nothing like,
right.
I'm going, okay, Dave, Mark, we got to figure this out. But for that, because of these conversations, we do think in terms of, like we said, Waterloo, Manor, even at Raisville now, if you go out there, new restroom again. And so,
and that's
if you think about next level, Alexander Elementary, we built an all-inclusive playground there.
Yep.
Now, that took private funding.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The school board and the school district didn't lay a lot of the money out, but it was people working with the community to say, hey, we'd love to have an all-inclusive playground.
But there was playground stuff that was done.
Cool, but what he's describing is
in the same school district.
With all-inclusive playground.
Where is that?
Is Alexander Elementary and Adrian.
Because we did, the playground update, the Manor and Manor.
Yeah, all they did there is.
They've got one at Douglas Road. My kids help. We'll do all.
They're wheelchair elementary
yeah.
student.
At Douglas
they gave her access
at Douglas
to almost
Road
all
elementary.
Of the parts
oh.
of the playground so she could play with friends.
Up
while
there, it's
being
like right on Warren. But that's
and
my
you have your.
It's
expensive,
well,
I'm
right.
not
right.
You almost have to have a private partnership.
Playgrounds.
It's very hard for a school.
It's becoming, I'm seeing more and more out there.
If I remember correctly,
Wayne, Washington, ISD, it's a whole
they
area
of
that you don't have
and
grass.
Then there was that kid
yeah, with the surface,
yes.
and
from
where is
that? Carrying his brother on his back. I don't know if you remember that, but I think that helped him raise money for it, too.
For inclusivity, that includes all student populations, not just one. So when we look at it from that standpoint, it almost seems like, from that perspective, there may need to be a priority focus if that's what we're looking
well,
for. If that's the way
but,
things are.
But
being.
As you start thinking that, that's the whole thing. As you start thinking on that path, you can. So when they years ago decided, okay, from the bottom line, they're going to put in playground. Each building got an allocation. Put in a playground, piece of equipment, okay? And that's all they did. And, but you know, now as we think about it, heading moving forward is, what should they look like? And to your point, that's where you see schools.
Yeah, I mean, it may make sense for any of us to go out to Alexander Elementary and see it. Do you see what an all-inclusive playground will look like?
They have one in
Bedford. They have one in Bedford, right? Anywhere it's close. Because it is a totally different experience. But once again, like I said, it's going to take some private partnership. It's going to take people, teachers, volunteers to build it. We took a whole Saturday and built it.
Can I just
yes.
add something to this? So yeah, it's very important to make sure that our physical environments are to folks, but our digital environment should be too. So the ADA actually has like guidelines for digital accessibility as well. And so that should extend to our website content. It should also extend to our digital signage. It should extend to just like posted signage in our buildings as well. So so you have to use font sizes, contrast, so that people that are visually impaired can use their e-readers. For people that need to use adaptive technologies in order to consume content online, that they can use those adaptive technologies to read websites for them.
So Dave's already done that, right? All the money you spent down there?
No, so the website.
I think we need to spend money in other areas.
So the website company, design company we use is already well aware of. That's why you don't see PDFs.
Well,
they don't see something on our website, and there's an evaluation tool that can be ran if your website is ADA compliant.
Ours is. But if somebody adds something, that's why I said you got to constantly check it, because somebody might throw something on that's not.
But even like when we're in board meetings,
right?
If we have somebody giving a presentation, making sure that we use strong enough contrast so that people that are in our virtual setting are able to at least see as well as they can in that digital space would be helpful.
What's that?
Just using strong, like black against white, or like maybe blue against white, and making sure that you're
around.
No,
like when they use these big screens. Like close to the
presentation. Yeah.
Well, I can use it on my paper, too.
The font
size. We're talking about
the
size. Let's not do a 0.05 font anymore.
I'm talking about digital accessibility and for people that need e-readers and things like that as well. So, just another component.
That's all I have today, sir.
Hey, John, you're doing well.
You're doing well.
Okay.
I think if there's no other topics, and I don't think there's going to be any public comments here. Okay, Ben, can I get a motion to adjourn? Do I have support? Show of hands. Very good. That concludes our agenda. Mineral Public Schools Board of Education special work session from Monday, November 10th, 2015 is adjourned. The time is 7:58.